This is a CBC podcast.
Hey there, I'm Nicola McLeod, and this is Good Question PEI. I was walking down the hallway of our CBC building a few weeks back when I ran into Sally Pitt. Now, Sally used to be a journalist here. She retired after a long career, and she now teaches at Holland College. And she says to me, "Hey, I've got a question for you."
Well, I've always been intrigued as to where the word warsh comes from, how the R got in there. I love it. I smile when I hear it, but I'm baffled as to how the R ended up in the word wash and ended up as warsh.
Have you noticed any regionality? Is there one part of the province you hear it in more than others?
Well, maybe it's just because I spend more time there, but I seem to hear it in the eastern part, like Murray Harbour, Montague area, but maybe that's just my exposure to that area.
My Grammy lives up west, and she does say
okay.
It as well. So
yeah.
It does spread tip to tip, I think.
Okay.
Pronouncing wash like warsh is one of those Islander-isms I've grown to love. It's become part of that island speak, that accent and dialect. You sometimes hear folks say that that accent is stronger the further you move away from Charlottetown.
When I first moved here, my last name is Pitt, and I was asked, "Are you related to the Pitts in Tignish?" And what I found out was that that is spelled P-I-T-R-E, which I would have pronounced Pitre. But in Tignish, apparently, they pronounced it Pitt.
I've noticed that as I get older, my Islanderness creeps into my speech more and more. Sometimes I listen back to my own interviews and I just have to laugh because I'm hearing my mother and my grandmother and their words coming out of my mouth. And some of my other colleagues who grew up here are in the same boat.
Definitely. And in fact, sometimes you don't even notice it. It's other people who will point it out to you because you've said it your whole life. So you obviously don't know that you're saying it incorrectly or that you're using it. Someone will say to me once in a while, they'll be like, "You have that Atlantic Canadian accent or the Acadian accent." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? I don't have an accent."
What's the one you catch yourself saying?
Sure, for sure. "That sure is a nice hat you're wearing."
I'm told I talk way too fast. Constantly told for television, slow it down, because when I talk fast, the accent is pouring out.
The island accent is so wonderful to me. It has its own distinctive lilt. And while folks in other parts of the country might lump all of us East Coasters and our accents into one group, to the trained ear, the PEI accent is different than somewhere like Newfoundland or Cape Breton. And that leads back to our question for this episode. Where did the PEI accent come from?
What's unique about Prince Edward Island is that there was an unusually large number of Scottish people who came. And they actually began coming not just in the mid-19th century like in the rest of Canada, but in the late 18th century. So there's an unusually powerful Scottish element in Prince Edward Island heritage. That's one of the things that makes the island distinct from surrounding areas. Of course, you also got a lot of Scots in Nova Scotia. But compared to other places in Canada, there were more Scots and perhaps fewer Irish than we get in some other places.
That's Charles Boberg. He studies sociolinguistics, particularly North American English. He's based out of McGill University in Montreal and is actually currently researching all of our distinctive dialects across the country. So he's the guy to answer the burning question. Why does someone in Surrey speak different than someone in Tignish?
Language is always changing. It's unstoppable. Sometimes people wish that it wouldn't change because they don't like the changes that are going on. But the fact is that all languages all over the world have always changed throughout all time. But people talk most like the other people they talk to, so like their peer group. As children, we grow up with a certain peer group, and we learn to talk like that peer group. And, of course, there's also an element of influence from the previous generation, like parents. But the ongoing force of language change means that each community is constantly innovating from one generation to the next. And if a community is not in contact with neighboring communities, then the innovations that happen in one community are not going to be shared with the innovations that happen in another community. community. And so those communities are going to diverge over time. And over thousands of years, we can see that that actually leads to the creation first of dialects. But then if the changes go on with these communities in isolation, those dialects eventually become mutually unintelligible languages over centuries. So here in Canada, of course, we're just looking at a couple of hundred years instead of thousands of years. And so we're not going to have separate languages evolving yet, but we can have separate dialects evolving. And that's what happens when you get changes going on in isolated communities. And of course, an island like PEI is in a way geographically naturally isolated. But as you said, even on the island, you're going to get, you know, different changes perhaps going on in Charlottetown from going on in other parts of the island.
So while all these separate dialects evolved because of the historic distance between communities in PEI, Boberg says as time goes on and people's connections to cities like Charlottetown grow, the dialects could be changing again.
On the other hand, we have an opposing force of convergence instead of divergence between dialects. And that's when you get a major center that has cultural influence on the sort of hinterland around it. Capital cities, for instance, big places like Toronto and Vancouver, but also smaller big places like Charlottetown. So to the extent that you get a kind of standard PEI English or standard Maritime English, which is going to be manifested probably in the sort of local elite or middle class of a place like Charlottetown, to some extent, as long as smaller communities are in contact with the people in Charlottetown, then that influence is going to spread as well. And that'll have the effect over time of perhaps diminishing some of the regional differences. And there's two opposing kinds of prestige involved in language, right? There's the local prestige associated with our home community. And most of us have a sense that we want to feel like we belong to the community we came from. And then there's a kind of a global prestige attached to a national or regional standard, like standard Canadian English as spoken in Toronto. Each person makes their own balance between those two kinds of speech and figures out how do I use language to express my particular social identity.
Accents, it turns out, say a lot. And for islanders, they can be a sort of shorthand for expressing these different social identities.
It's this weird thing because islanders have this pride and humility that they're trying to balance at the same time. Because when you speak with someone, you connect, you get them, right? And the pride is like, you're so happy, you're proud of where you're from, proud of being an islander.
One of the more unique examples of that shared pride and language is the affirmative inhale.
My grandma used to start a conversation on the telephone. She would call, you would pick up, and she'd start talking. And there would be no hello or anything like that. And that was fine. We all knew. And then we all knew that the way she ended the conversation was, yeah, 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 click.
See, I always think of it more as like if someone's telling a long-winded story and I'm indicating to them that I'm still paying attention, that's where I throw in the, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, it's usually, I've also borrowed this now. It's my way of getting away from a conversation. It basically says, yes, I agree with you, and now this is over.
This is one that I think also occurs in parts of the UK. In fact, I think I've heard it in Scottish and Irish English, perhaps also in England. So I don't think it's something unique to PEI. I think also it's reported in Nova Scotia. So it may be more associated with sort of Scottish or Celtic origin Englishes. It's an interesting example that is so different from, you know, the usual kind of variation we talk about, which is the words and pronunciations.
Another one you hear a lot on PEI is words that end in AD. So whether it's like sad, mad, dad turns into sad, mad, dad. Like, how do those types of changes develop in language?
That's very interesting. Well, that's called diphthongization, or in the history of English, it's called breaking, something that happened a couple of times in the history of English. But it's particularly notable in American dialects, like in New York City and Philadelphia, they say bad and mad. So how it got to PEI, that's fascinating. When we were doing when I was in graduate school, I was working on an atlas of North American English that I produced with my supervisor. And that was one of the things that we were looking at, those kinds of vowels. And we were really surprised to find those pronunciations in parts of Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. We actually, unfortunately, didn't get to PEI on that big project, the Continental Project. But it's fascinating to hear you report that you've heard that on the island.
So to recap, Languages, like our beautiful island accent, develop over time in communities where people reflect back what they're hearing around them. That's why we sound different than folks in Newfoundland and Labrador, but someone from down east also speaks differently than someone from up west. And every community has its own unique quirks.
I love the very best in Tignish. Very best. It's just kind of like a yes.
I love Slippy. I love Warsh. There's so much I love, but I'm still learning. I've been here 30 years and I'm still learning, Nicola.
Are there any of them that you've like adopted into your own speech?
I do say Slippy all the time now, and I say it proudly. And I have been caught saying the yeah for sure.
Does the imagine? Has that slipped in?
I haven't said imagine a lot, no. But now that you say it, I like the sound. Do it one more time.
Imagine.
I do like that.
My uncles who live up in Surrey would say meat and potatoes. They also said Nort Rustico.
I actually had like an ex-girlfriend who had to like pull me aside and be like, stop calling me bud. Like, I don't want to be your buddy.
Every time I say hello to people, because it's never hi with me. It's never hello. It's what are you saying, devil? How you doing, big dog? What's new? What's happening? How are you? How the kids? The accent comes out thick like molasses.
I think islanders are both proud of the uniqueness and the way they relate to each other and communicate. But there's also this idea that we have rural accents that need to be hidden, particularly in a professional environment.
Many people have a sensitivity about their social prestige and the degree to which you know, others admire them or disparage them in various ways. And language is an important part of that. It's such an important social symbol. And there's a general sense, I think, in all places that there's a standard way of speaking and there's various non-standard ways of speaking. And those can be rural non-standards, which, you know, often tend to have the reputation of being charming or quaint. And then there's urban non-standards, which are often disparaged as lazy or ignorant. But in both cases, people may feel a sort of sense of shame, I suppose, in an extreme case of speaking a certain way, because it suggests that they, you know, haven't received as much formal education as someone else.
There are so many words and turns of phrase that you only hear in PEI. And since it isn't every day that I get to sit down with a linguist, I decided to do a little rapid-fire round on the history of some of these islanderisms.
I really like Slippy.
Please use in a sentence.
The roads out there are some slippy today.
You're from rural Nova Scotia. Do they say slippy there?
No, we just say slippery. So slippy is just, it's fun to me, it's casual, and it's an island thing.
Yeah, that's, you know, the sort of thing that often happens with words that are said often. We get a little bit lazy when we're talking sometimes, and we kind of gloss over syllables that aren't really needed. And as long as we're still understood by the people we're talking to, then those sorts of changes, you know, have happened throughout the history of the language. This particular one I actually didn't know about until you asked me about it. So I looked it up in a wonderful book by a colleague of mine at the University of Prince Edward Island, Terry Pratt, who published a dictionary of Prince Edward Island English, and Slippy is in there. And he says that it's actually also found in some historical British dialects, so it's not unique to BEI, but it is something often heard on the island. And interestingly, the clip you played also included another nice maritime form, which was some, meaning quite. So it's some slippy. You could say the day, it's some hot today, right? And that's a real maritime thing that is perhaps even more unique to the Maritimes than slippy would be.
Slippy is an example of a situation where we are removing letters that are supposed to be there. But what about adding in letters where they're not supposed to be?
Across is my favorite. When we add T's to words, just across the street. Yeah.
Or your cousin?
Cousin. Also another strong one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
I have a bunch of my own too. So, you know, I grew up in the Ottawa Valley where we had all kinds of things where warm became warm. You know, it's like
every place has their special thing.
Every place has their special thing. And I love it.
I went to graduate school in Philadelphia and across was definitely part of Philadelphia English. Where it comes from is not clear. I've done a little bit of research on this, and there's a number of theories that it may go back to various kinds of Irish or Scottish English. There's also areas in the U.S. where people say once and twice instead of once and twice, or that it may be a sort of confusion with other adverbs. Like if you have while and whilst, you have across and acrossed. It may be a confusion between the past tense of cross. So if you say, I crossed a field and then I went across a field, you can see how people would maybe get a little confused as to whether there should be a T sound or not on the end. There's a whole bunch of different theories that could be explored as to why this particular form happens. But as I said, I definitely something that that I've heard in Philadelphia English and perhaps elsewhere. So perhaps that also came up with the loyalists. Who knows?
So, of course, this now brings us to the question that inspired this entire episode. Where does the R in Warsh, as in wash, come from?
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to keep pricking your local balloon, but this is also one that occurs in parts of the United States, again, in actually Pennsylvania and West Virginia. They are particularly known. That's a region of the United States that dialectologists call the Midland, the North Midland, because it's between the North, which is like New England speech, and the South, which, of course, we all know what that is. The Midland is particularly strong in western Pennsylvania, like around Pittsburgh, and then into West Virginia. And that area is very well known for saying warsh, not just warsh, as in, and they would say, interesting grammatical construction, the car needs washed instead of the car needs to be washed, or the car needs washing. But they also extend it to Washington, the capital of the United States. So warsh and Washington. Interestingly, the word squash doesn't seem to have the same thing. So people don't say squash for that. But it's definitely a Midland dialect feature, and I can only imagine that it must have come into PEI from the Loyalists. On the other hand, people say that the reason it's in that area of western Pennsylvania and West Virginia is that those areas were heavily settled by Scots-Irish immigrants. So, you know, Ulster Scots, Ulster Irish. And so it may be that it's something that began in that kind of regional English and that came in with Scottish or Ulster Irish immigrants to PEI too. I'm not sure. It's not clear exactly what the history of it is.
It's so interesting, and I think it will burst some bubbles to find out that some of these speech patterns are not not entirely unique.
Not as local as people thought they were, but that doesn't matter. People can still think of them as local. And in the Canadian context, I don't think anyone else says warsh in Canada, as far as I know. From a Canadian point of view, it is unique to PEI, and in fact, I was really surprised to hear you say that it occurs there. It's not something that I had encountered before.
This is the hill we can die on.
That's right, exactly.
Charles and a colleague are currently surveying Canadians about the way they speak to develop an understanding of how English has evolved across the country since the last survey was done 50 years ago. He's gotten some responses from PEI, but says he wants to get more. Anyone can participate, but he's particularly interested in folks who are strong examples of our local English, as well as teenagers as young as 14, and folks like our grandparents.
This is a unique opportunity to see how PEI English is Canadian versus American versus British. I mean, that's a question that we're asking in all regions across the country, but also how it differs from the other kinds of English spoken in Canada, and how it is changing over time. So how the younger folks are speaking a slightly different kind of PEI English from the older folks, and that's something that'll be very interesting to look at once we have enough data on PEI English.
Charles, thank you so much for your time.
You're most welcome. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
You can find that survey at mcgill.ca/Canadian English. And while you're online, you can send your questions to goodquestionpei@cbc.ca and follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. I'll be back next week with another one of your questions. For Good Question PEI, I'm Nicola McLeod.
Go on, get.
See ya.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.